Welcome to the 11KBW podcast on Combined Authorities by Andrew Sharland. This talk was given at the 11KBW Local Authority Conference on the 4th of October 2016. For more podcasts and information, please visit 11kbw.com.
Good afternoon, everyone. In the next 30 minutes, I'm going to cover three topics. Firstly, some background on combined authorities. What are they? Where have they come from and where are they going? Secondly, the nuts and bolts of the statutory scheme, the new statutory scheme. And finally, to end on a high, we're going to discuss Derbyshire County Council's judicial review claim to a proposed expansion of a combined authority. Turning to my first topic, what is a combined authority? Well, in broad terms, it's a type of local government institution introduced in England, outside Greater London by Part 6 of the Local Democracy, Economic Development and Construction Act 2009, hereafter the 2009 Act. Now, I realise with my first substantive slide that I potentially lost about a third of my audience, namely those who act for Greater London. Now, I'm sure the vast majority of lawyers who act for London authorities have a profound love of the law, generally, and therefore will listen attentively. However, for the small minority who don't, when I turn to my third topic, the Derbyshire Challenge, I will cover the law of consultation briefly, which hopefully will be of some interest to you. Now, Part 6 of the 2009 Act introduced two new types of local government institutions, economic prosperity boards and combined authorities. Both of these new institutions could be set up by two or more local authorities. The Economic Prosperity Board's role was more limited. Its function was limited to boosting economic prosperity and development. Economic Prosperity Boards have not been very popular. I can only find reference to one involving Cheshire and Warrington. Combined authorities combine the function of Economic Prosperity Boards with transport functions, or that was the scope of their functions under the 2009 Act as originally enacted. According to the Department for Local Government and Communities, combined authorities are intended to, quote, support improved strategic decision-making on economic issues and better coordination and delivery of economic development interventions by local authorities. They take into account the fact that the functional economic market areas are often much larger than individual local authority areas. Combined authorities have been popular. Five such authorities were set up under the 2009 Act as unamended. They're all in the north of England, and they're all based around a city: Manchester, Liverpool, Sheffield, Newcastle, Leeds. They're often very sizable. Greater Manchester Combined Authority, comprised of 10 local authority areas, the Liverpool Combined Authority, 7. Now, importantly, Part 6 of the 2009 Act has been substantially amended by the recent Cities and Local Government Devolution Act 2016 that came into force at the beginning of this year. The 2016 Act greatly expanded the potential role for combined authorities. Firstly, it enables the Secretary of State to confer any local government function on a combined authority. Remember, previously it had been limited to economic prosperity, development and transport. Now it can be anything. Secondly, it enables any public authority function relating to an area to be conferred on a combined authority. So you can have functions transferred down from central government to these combined authorities. And thirdly, it provides for an elected mayor for a combined authorities area who would exercise specific functions individually and chair the authority. So now there's two types of combined authority: those with a directly elected mayor and those that don't have a directly elected mayor. The two new combined authorities come into existence post the 2006 coming into force. Both of them are mayoral combined authorities, and a number of the original non-mayoral combined authorities are converting into mayoral combined authorities with elections planned for May next year. Now, it's not all been plain sailing so far. The North East Combined Authority, which is Newcastle and the surrounding area, has run into some difficulty. A devolution deal was rejected by a majority of the councils whose areas comprise this combined authority last week over fears as to funding post-Brexit. The 2016 mayoral combined authorities are a vehicle for the devolution of powers and budgets to encourage economic growth in accordance with the various devolution deals. But whether that's going to work post-Brexit, that's something I think Jonathan Swift is going to return to this afternoon. I read in the news yesterday that some suggestions that the North East Combined Authority may collapse start again with a smaller combined authority and enter into a devolution deal with the central government with that smaller area. Now, so far I've just been talking about the north, but the south is starting to get in on the action. A proposed Solent mayoral combined authority is being discussed, comprising the areas of Portsmouth, the Isle of Wight, and Southampton. These are three unitary authorities. This proposed combined authority is not without controversy, and I know there's solicitors from, I think, all those authorities here today, so you'll know about that in more detail than I will. But I understand that certain district councils in Hampshire wish to be part of this combined authority, but Hampshire County Council itself did not want to have any of its area included within the combined authority. And this conflict between district councils and county councils is something we're going to return to as the talk progresses, because it's a recurring theme. Turning to second topic, the nuts and bolts of the 2009 Act as amended. First general point I want to make is that the 2009 Act is very much an enabling act, both in its original form as amended. The details of what combined authorities will do will vary and will be set out in the orders. Now, establishment of a combined authority. Secretary of State may, by order, establish a body corporate, a combined authority for an area that meets two conditions. Used to be four conditions, but two of them have been discarded. The first condition that now applies is the area consists of the whole of two or more local government areas. Second condition is that no part of the area forms part of another combined authority. That should be EPB, an Economic Prosperity Board, or an Integrated Transport Area. So you can't have a particular area that's in more than one such organisation. One issue that arises in the Derbyshire case that I'm going to come to at the end is whether a county council can be a constituent council in more than one combined area, with some of its area being part of one combined authority and some of its area being part of another combined authority. Now, what does the Secretary of State have to think about before he or she decides to make an order? Well, three requirements must be met before the Secretary of State can make such an order. Firstly, the Secretary of State needs to take the view to decide that such combined authority is likely to improve the exercise of statutory functions in the relevant areas. That, I think, gives the Secretary of State a broad discretion, and challenges to the exercise of that discretion, I think, are likely to be quite difficult. The second requirement is all of the constituent councils consent to the establishment. Now, what is a constituent council, I hear you shout? Well, it means a county council, any part of whose area is within the proposed combined authority area, or a district council whose area is within the proposed combined authority area. Thus, a county council will, if it wishes, be able to veto the formation of a combined authority that includes some of its area. And this was an issue in the Hampshire Solent area. There were a number of district councils that wanted to become part of the combined authority, but Hampshire wasn't having any of that. And they essentially had a veto. Now, importantly, the position in relation to amendment of boundaries of combined authorities is different. That's something I'm going to come to shortly. The third requirement is a consultation, either by the Secretary of State or by the constituent councils. Now, functions. As I flagged up earlier in the talk, combined authorities now have very broad functions. Transport, any local authority function, any other public bodies' functions that the Secretary of State sees fit to transfer. The combined authority may also, if the order specifies, have the general power of competence that's set out in Section 1 of the Localism Act. The functions that each combined authority have will vary. It's driven by local choice and negotiations between central and local government. At present, the Greater Manchester Combined Authority has the widest range of functions, including health and social care, children's services, and public health. Now, transfer of powers is not necessarily a one-off event. Additional functions can be transferred subsequently. The guidance from the Local Government Association talks about this being a process, an ongoing process. Now, there are some constraints on what can be transferred in the health context. Health service functions that form part of the Secretary of State for Health's core duties and any health-related regulatory functions vested in national bodies can't be transferred, but clearly quite a lot of health functions could be transferred if that was thought appropriate. Now, mayoral combined authorities, these appear very much to be the way forward. The mayor is a member of and chairs the combined authority. He or she is directly elected. The order setting up the combined authority may provide for certain functions to be exercisable only by the mayor. This is somewhat mirroring some of the executive arrangements adopted by certain local authorities. There must be a deputy mayor, and the mayor potentially may exercise police and crime commissioner functions for their area, whether that is an acknowledgement that the PCC is not working that well, I'm not sure. Now, I dealt with a minute ago establishment of combined authorities, but the boundaries of combined authorities are not set in stone once they've been established. Other areas can be added or even removed. The required consent for adding a local authority area is that of the combined authority itself, its mayor, if there is one, and the relevant council in relation to the area to be added. Now, if the area to be added is the area of a county council, i.e. the whole of the area, then the county is the relevant authority and it has to consent. However, if the area is being added is an area of a district within a county council area, then the relevant council is either the district council or the county council. It is sufficient if either of those councils consent to the addition. So to go back to the proposed combined authority in the Hampshire Solent area, whilst Hampshire County Council can prevent any of its area being part of a new combined authority if it wishes, once that combined authority is set up, if a district council subsequently wishes to join and become part of that combined authority, Hampshire County Council no longer has a veto and part of its area could become part of a combined authority against its wishes. Now, financial matters. The non-mayoral combined authorities, the money comes from a levy of the constituent councils. There's no extra money there. Mayoral combined authorities, elected mayors can raise additional resources through a precept on local council tax bills, but only where the order permits them to do so. A third source of money is the devolution deals with central government. Governance arrangements. Constitutional arrangements of combined authorities are set out in the various schedules to the combined orders. The majority of members of the combined authority must be appointed by the constituent councils. Each council must appoint at least one of its elected members as a member of the combined authority. The Act as amended introduces overview and scrutiny committees and audit committees, again mirroring the approach adopted in local authority areas. Now, turning to my third and final topic, Derbyshire County Council's judicial review challenge. At this point, London local authority lawyers can now awake from their slumber as it's time to talk about consultation. Now, Derbyshire County Council has issued a judicial review challenge challenging a consultation exercise carried out by the Barnsley, Doncaster, Rotherham and Sheffield Combined Authority. The Combined Authority's consultation concerned a proposed geographical extension to encompass two new areas, Chesterfield Borough Council's area, which is situated in Derbyshire, and Bassett Law District Council's area, which is situated in Nottinghamshire. Chesterfield Borough Council wishes to be part of the Combined Authority, wishes that the Combined Authority includes its area, but Derbyshire County Council definitely does not. It doesn't want to have to be part of the Sheffield Combined Authority. Indeed, it wishes the whole of its area to become part of a different Combined Authority. Now, as I mentioned earlier, unlike the position in relation to establishment of combined authorities, the County Council does not have a veto over the amendment of boundaries to include part of their area. Now, Derbyshire contends that if the area of Chesterfield Borough Council becomes part of the Sheffield Combined Authority, Derbyshire County Council will necessarily become part of that combined authority and will be prevented from becoming a constituent council in another combined authority. That's one of the issues that is in dispute in the case. Derbyshire further contends that the consultation was unlawful because it failed to comply with the statutory scheme and it failed to comply with the requirements of fair consultation as articulated in the case law. Now, counsel for the claimant is chairing this session. Counsel for the intervener addressed you this morning on proportionality, and there's a two-day hearing listed in early November. In light of that, I'm going to tread carefully what I say about this challenge. Say, the first aspect of Derbyshire's consultation challenge is it's inconsistent with the statutory provision, and in particular section 113 of the 2009 Act, because it fails to consult the public, as it excluded residents of Derbyshire generally outside of the district of Chesterfield from its consultation. Secondly, it is said it failed to consult on the specific proposals set out in the scheme, but instead asked any various general questions about devolution. So that's sort of ground one on the consultation. The second ground is a more traditional challenge. It said that the consultation was misleading and insufficiently detailed to allow a proper response because there was no reference to alternative options and the consultation failed to mention that Derbyshire did not consent to any of this and was very unhappy with this. That is a reflection of the well-known Gunning criteria, which I've set out there. I'm sure you're all very familiar with that. And the focus of the second part of Derbyshire's challenge is very much on the second criterion. Proposer must give sufficient reasons for the proposal to permit intelligent consideration of that response. Somewhat unusually in this statutory scheme, the first three parts of the consultation in the Derbyshire case are carried out by the combined authority, with the fourth element of the Gunning criteria, the decision, carried out by the Secretary of State. Now, those of you who are involved in bringing and resisting consultation challenges will be aware that a common issue in such challenges is timing. And this is an issue in the Derbyshire challenge. In the Royal Brompton case, Lady Justice Arden suggested that often it will be appropriate to wait until a consultation is concluded before challenging it by way of judicial review, although there will be cases where it's appropriate, such as where there is, quote, some irretrievable flaw in the consultation process. Now, in the present case, Derbyshire issued their challenge before the consultation process had ended, and they assert that there is an irretrievable flaw. This may be a difficult issue for the council because of the possibility under the statutory scheme of further consultation by the Secretary of State, which could possibly cure any earlier problems. Claimants in consultation challenges face difficult decisions in relation to timing. If they issue proceedings before the consultation process has been completed and the decision made, defendants will say, look, you're premature. If, on the other hand, they wait until the decision's been made, most public authorities will say, well, you've delayed too long, you're not prompt, you're late, go away. I did a case for some local authorities in Norfolk where the Secretary of State somewhat innovatively contended our claim was both too early and too late. It was an interesting argument. Both aspects of that argument failed, but it was fun listening to counsel articulate it or try to articulate it. Now, as I'm sure almost all of you are aware, the leading case on consultation is now the Supreme Court decision in Moseley, which concerned a challenge to a consultation in relation to the council tax reduction scheme. The challenge in that case was successful. The two main judgments, Lord Wilson and Lord Reed, very different analysis and emphasis, leaving lawyers unclear as to what the precise ratio of the case is. You may recall that the other three judges agreed with both judgments and said there wasn't much between them, which was singularly unhelpful. But one can extract some key principles from the Moseley case, and I've set them out in the next two slides. Consultation has three purposes: hopefully leads to better decisions, avoid a sense of injustice, and reflects the democratic principle. My experience of consultation is it's never avoided a sense of injustice on the part of someone who's unhappy with the final decision, but that is at least the hope. The court endorsed the Gunning principles, which I set out in an earlier slide. The degree of specificity and detail that must be provided to consultees might depend on the identity of the consultees and what's being consulted on. Where consultees are potentially being deprived of a benefit, a more detailed approach, a more full consultation is likely to be required. Sometimes, according to Lord Wilson, fairness will require consulting not just on the preferred option, but on discarded alternative options. Even where that's not required, fairness may require reference to discarded alternative options. And on the facts of that case, the consultation document was said to be inadequate. Now, the Derbyshire challenge picks up on some of these key principles. It contends that the combined authority should have consulted on alternative options, and it attacks the consultation document as being misleading and insufficiently detailed. After Moseley came out, the initial reaction was it's going to strengthen consultation claims and make it easier to bring such challenges. However, that's not what the High Court have interpreted Moseley as so far. In the last couple of slides, I list six cases where a consultation challenge has been brought post-Moseley. And in relation to those six cases, all of those challenges have failed. They were all unsuccessful. Moseley's largely been distinguished on the facts or understood as consolidating rather than amending the previously understood principles relating to consultation. Now, whether as a matter of analysis such an approach to Moseley is correct, that remains open to debate, and no doubt the Derbyshire case will take that debate forward. I don't feel the courts have really grappled with the inconsistencies in the judgments in Moseley, and it's unlikely that the Moseley case will be the first and last occasion on which the Supreme Court considers the issue of consultation. Perhaps Derbyshire's challenge will be the next one, James. So, final point to take away: you must come back next year to find out what happened in the Derbyshire challenge. Thanks very much for listening.